This evening I'm going to talk about the mythological idea of sacrifice and bliss. And a few reasons I'll be talking about this. One is that right now in the Christian calendar, we're in the period known as Holy Week. And some of you may be more familiar with this than others, but I'll just fill in a couple details if it's something unfamiliar to you, that yesterday was Palm Sunday, the day that celebrates Jesus' triumphant entry into Jerusalem. This Thursday will be Holy Thursday, sometimes called Maundy Thursday, which celebrates the event of the Last Supper. Friday is Good Friday, which commemorates his crucifixion. And then Sunday is Easter, which of course commemorates his resurrection. And so this is, in Christianity, really the most important sacred holiday of the year. I know that capitalism makes it seem that Christmas is more important, but really, liturgically and spiritually, the days leading up to Easter and then Easter itself are really the pivotal Christian holidays. And I'm intrigued also because sacrifice and bliss plays into Buddhism and the Buddha's own nature, the Buddha's own journey. It's said that the Prince Siddhartha, after a long search, came to the Bo tree. He took the vow, "I will not rise until I have attained the complete enlightenment." He faced temptations that evening. And then it's said that in the morning, the moment he saw the morning star, he had the breakthrough. And his old identity was extinguished. It was blown out like a candle. And that's actually what the word nirvana means. It means to extinguish or blow out. And so he was no longer Prince Siddhartha. He was awakened. He was the Buddha. And that is, in many ways, the sacrifice of ego. And it's funny the way that Buddhism talks about this. Buddhism would say that they talk about the truth of anatta, non-self. That there's nothing in the universe that has a separate self. You know, and I may think I'm separate, and I may walk around with all kinds of stories about, you know, I'm special this way, and I'm different this way, and all that. But in fact, everything about me is dependent on and defined by and determined by all my interactions with everyone else, you know. And so that the Buddhism would say our primary reality, and really the only reality, is where we're in interconnection with everything. And that, you know, the whole idea that I am a separate self, Buddhism would call that ultimately an illusion that we see through or let go at the moment of enlightenment. And there's a way that the conversation in Buddhist terms can get very heady and very intellectual, letting go of the idea of separateness as if it's, you know, purely an intellectual shift. And what I find really powerful about juxtaposing it with the Christian events of Holy Week is that there's no getting around that the crucifixion of Jesus was a painful, you know, just an excruciating event. And we know this historically. The Romans were just brutally efficient at coming up with all kinds of horrible ways to murder people. Like, that was their one real talent. The reason that the illusion of ego is so persistent that, you know, we hear this talk about the ideas of Buddhism and then we just go back into the world and act as if we're separate, you know. It's such a persistent idea because we have so much emotion invested in it. And I think something that is not often acknowledged in some of the discussions about Buddhism, how much of a death experience, how much of a loss it is to lose ego. And this is the, you know, the language of sacrifice and bliss is all about that. The sacrifice is really that loss of ego, but acknowledging that it's something very painful. And yet it leads to this breakthrough. Joseph Campbell is funny. He talks about how Christ dying on the cross and Buddha letting go of ego and attaining enlightenment under the Bo tree, that mythologically these are really the same image. That fundamentally there's a deeper underlying spiritual truth that underlies both of those, which is not to deny the truth of either of those religions, you know. And so in some ways it's a very big idea, but in some ways it's a very ordinary, intimate idea. There are small cycles of sacrifice and bliss all the time. You all came here to a Monday night meditation and did meditation, you know. Insofar as you had any moments that you were interrupting your story and just having a moment of clarity where you were fully present, that was a moment of sacrifice and bliss. A little, you know, a tiny letting go of your story and a tiny opening up. Really, you could say in some perspective, all the moral teachings, all the virtues, you know, whether it is patience or tolerance or acceptance or forgiveness or, you know, so forth. All of these are ways that we check our own ego, check the way that, you know, I might just, you know, the spoiled child in me would like life to go. I check that in order to act more ethically, you know. And again, kind of an experience of sacrifice and bliss. There is a as it were, a loss, a temporary, momentary loss for ego, because I don't get to do whatever I want, you know. I have to acknowledge limits, but in that acknowledging of limits, I create the possibility for deeper connection. And it's hard to look at the attachments of ego directly. One way to think about the attachments to ego is, think about the last time someone really insulted you or offended you. You know? When they said, you're a blank, 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 blank. And it really, like, you know, it really hit home. You know? That's a very good mirror to how attached we are to self-image. You know? Of course, you know, it's hard to conceptualize what it is to lose ego in the big picture. But what would it be to lose, you know, a certain part of our lives? You know, something that we're emotionally invested in. Our car, our apartment, you know. What if we were in an accident and lost an arm or a leg or sight or something like that? It would be a tremendous loss. You know, and if you just think into it a minute, you can feel the depth of that loss. And yet that's nothing compared to the loss of ego. If you see what I mean. That's just losing one piece, not the whole enchilada. And so it's a really interesting question just to sit with. What would be, you know, just in terms of mental or emotional shifts, nothing necessarily changing in the outside world, just in terms of mental or emotional shifts, what would be some of the deeper sacrifices I could make? What is the place in me that would really have a hard time with giving some idea up, Rumi has this line about, wish for the tyranny of the friend, not his tenderness, so that the arrogant beauty in you can become a lover that weeps. And just what is the place in you that is the arrogant beauty? I know I'm special, and I want to be special, damn it, like that kind of thing. Can you even just face that part of yourself? We all have something like that, So I'll share the quote sheet at this point. So the lead quote is from the Gospel of John. It's actually from the New Testament story. It's something that he says at the Last Supper. Unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains just a single grain. But if it dies, it bears much fruit. And it's very interesting to think of these plant images. Bury an acorn, it becomes an oak tree. But once we have the oak tree, where is the original acorn? In some sense, it's the whole tree. But in some sense, it's not there anymore. You as you know yourself right now are the acorn. As I know myself right now, And it's a powerful image. What if we were to be the tree instead of the acorn? The acorn isn't really there anymore. A couple quotes from Joseph Campbell. This is from his, when he was giving interviews with Bill Moyers, title of one of the episodes of that was Sacrifice and Bliss. And so this is from the Sacrifice and Bliss episode. The Buddha under his tree and Christ hanging on his tree are the same image. They are the same image. The one who has died to the flesh and been reborn in the spirit. This is an essential experience of any mystical realization. You die to your flesh and are born to your spirit. You identify yourself with the consciousness and life of which your body is but the vehicle. You die to the vehicle and become identified in your consciousness with that of which the vehicle is a carrier. Do you understand me? And that is the God. And he adds a little later, that's the message of myth. You, as you know yourself, are not the final term of your being. And you must die to that, one way or another, in giving of yourself to something or in being annihilated, actually physically, to return, you might say, or to recognize the greater self. Life is always on the edge of death, always, and one should lack fear and have the courage of life. Just a little bit challenging, isn't it? From Rumi, don't grieve. Anything you lose comes around in another form. That's great. From St. Francis, the blessed Bodhisattva, the Christian tradition after whom this entire geographic area is named. Above all, the grace and gifts that Christ gives to his beloved is that of overcoming self. From William Blake, the most sublime act is to set another before you. There's something really understated and powerful about that. Really to acknowledge the other as other and take them in as other. You're not here for my entertainment. You're not here to satisfy my needs. You know, what is it really to take in the other as other? From Balzac, someday you will find out there is far more happiness in another's happiness than in your own. Very simple. James Allen tells us, he who would accomplish little must sacrifice little. He would achieve much must sacrifice much. And he who would attain highly must sacrifice greatly. This wonderful one from Rilke, the purpose of life is to be defeated by greater and greater things. You know, and it's funny because if we look at ourselves, we've all had moments when we've been defeated by the most trivial things imaginable. You know, I've been defeated by the fact that I can't find the keys to my car. I've been defeated by the fact that, you know, my shoelace broke or whatever it is. You know, we can be defeated by the most trivial and ridiculous things. And what would it be to allow ourselves to be defeated only by greater and more noble things? You know, Carl Jung tells us, the experience of the self is always a defeat for the ego. That one is also very deep. Sadhu Vaswani tells us, the mark of one who loves gods and saints is sacrifice. Aldous Huxley tells us, there's only one effectively redemptive sacrifice, the sacrifice of self-will to make room for the knowledge of God. The Maharishi tells us, the most important thing is this, to be able at any moment to sacrifice what we are for what we could become. Richard Rohr tells us, if we seek spiritual heroism ourselves, the old ego is back in control under a new name. There would not really be any change at all, but only disguise, just bogus self-improvement on our own terms. Paul Keolo tells us, anyone who has lost something they thought was theirs forever finally comes to realize that nothing really belongs to them. Marshall Goldsmith tells us, if we can sacrifice something comfortable that we're, quote, too good at, that might even be holding us back, we'll have more room to grow into the person we want to be. Haruki Murakami says, every one of us is losing something precious to us, lost opportunities, lost possibilities, feelings we can never get back again. That's part of what it means to be alive. Marilyn Manson, who actually has some very wise things to say, says, sacrifice to me is something you do without expecting anything in return. You know, and that's certainly the message of sacrifice and bliss. It's an ego loss without any of the, well, what's in it for me, you know. Chris Yami tells us, those who live, oh wait, we skipped one. Elizabeth Gilbert says, it all goes away. Eventually everything goes away. Chris Yami says, those who live as though God sets the rules are not going by their own rules. That is self-sacrifice or selflessness that peace more often than not requires. Those who insist on going by their own rules cannot make that sacrifice. They are steady adherents of global conflict because they are forever fighting both themselves and others to do what they think that they want to do. That one's a really interesting one. Like, whose rules am I following? Am I following my rules or am I responding to how life is? Chris Vallotton says, you can sacrifice and not love, but you cannot love and not sacrifice. A couple from Craigs D. Lunsborough, he says, love exceeds all other emotions because it dares to take the passion to give oneself to another and turn it into a decision. Therefore, the feelings of love ever find itself fleeting, the decision to love won't. Very interesting, this distinction between the feeling of love and the decision of love. He also says, If I am not the servant of others, by process of elimination, then I am the servant to myself, and that serves no one. And Stephanie Golden says, in appropriate sacrifice, the self maintains solicitude for itself amid caring for others. It also feels a strong connection to other people. Growing out of the balance between caring for self and others simultaneously, it can accept other people as they are. And that, I think, is a really important idea also, that sacrifice is not a weak kind of giving ourselves away. You know, in America, this is a nation where, unfortunately, it's a culture that fosters very poor boundaries. And so many people's idea of sacrifice is just giving themselves away. And that's not what sacrifice is. Sacrifice comes from a place of strength and balance, not from a place of weakness.